record button over here. If I can just get you to say just like 1, 2, 3 or something like that.
1, 2, 3.
Perfect. Okay. Excuse me. I'm just in the very early stages of a cold, so I'm a bit coughy, so I'll try to keep that to a minimum.
Oh, yeah, I know what it's like. It's a bad time of year.
It really
I'm just
is.
Just going to close the window.
Okay, great.
So that if, you know, trucks go past, it doesn't get in the way. Okay.
Yes. Okay, so we'll jump straight in. Are you ready to go?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, fantastic. Today is Saturday, September 9th, 2017. My name is Kirby Fenwick and I'm joined today by Yvette Andrews, the founding secretary of the Sydney Women's Australian Football League. Thank you for being here today, Yvette.
That's fine.
So we'll start with some background. Can you tell me how the Sydney Women's Australian Football League came about?
Okay. So I guess, you know, most of us grow up on other football in Sydney, and I certainly followed rugby union and rugby league. But in the mid-90s, I went to a Swans game, and it blew me away, and I became a massive fan. And just, I guess people just started to talk. I wrote to the AFL, and I'm sure other people were doing the same thing. And then around about 1998, a group of us got together and basically had a kick at a local club. And from that, you know, the league grew. So that was down at Western Suburbs. The next year we had a couple of practice games, or I guess they were you know, fun but competitive games. And then the following year we started the league properly in 2000.
And how many teams did you start with? What did the league look like in the early days?
We started off with a Western and East team. Which is kind of typical for Sydney, and it's still like that today. And then we ended up with 5 teams from, you know, we had a Campbelltown team, so far west all the way to the eastern suburbs, and we weren't sure what was going to happen, so we played 9 aside on a shorter field. You know, it was hard to get ground, so we often played 2 games on 1 ground at once, but we ended up with, you know, more players, and we sort of ended up with 12 aside. So it's a bit like, you know, juniors, but we didn't play it like that. We were pretty fierce. And it kind of went from there. And the next year we played, you know, a full field and more players on the field and the like. But we did go to the national championships in 2000. I actually went in 1999 with the ACT. So we were always playing at that kind of national and for that time elite level.
And can you tell us a little bit about your footballing career?
Sure. So I played for the Western Wolves. I played sort of all over the ground. I loved it. I wished I could have played when I was younger. You know, and in that first year, there was quite a few women rocking up and starting football in their 40s. I was a bit younger than that, thankfully. But we just didn't have that opportunity. In the first year, the Western Wolves won the grand final in double extra time. It was incredibly intense. And because I was secretary of the league, I had to have a meeting, as well as playing ruck for most of the game, have a meeting with the umpires and the AFL to work out how we would finish this game, because it just kept going on and on and the scores were tied. And then I played for another 6 years. I coached for a year and we won a premiership that year. And I played national, you know, in the state team for several years as well, including in Darwin and Perth and Adelaide. So I had a pretty strong network at the national level, and we had a meeting. We formed a group in about 2003, a national women's advisory group. And so it had people like Nicole Graves, you might speak to Nicole a long way, from around the country, and we met with the AFL and kind of mapped out where we thought women's AFL should go on a national, from a national perspective. And I actually found those notes from those first few meetings a couple of months ago, and we actually sort of mapped out exactly what's happened. We probably didn't predict the National Women's League as it is, but we certainly were talking about alignment to AFL clubs, you know, national development programs, youth girls, and an idea of that really important need for exposure and sort of exhibition matches aligned with the men's competition. And, you know, what is it, 15 years later, there it is. So it's pretty cool.
What was it, what is it or was it about football that attracted you? Like, what did you, what was
what
it
did
about
I
the
like
game?
About it? Yeah, look, as a teenager, I kind of wanted to play rugby union, but it just didn't exist, and then you kind of get distracted. But the first game I went to and saw AFL live, because you sort of try and pick it up on the TV, it doesn't make sense, and it was like a massive hug of sport. Like, it was totally enveloping, this experience of this game that sort of took place on this grand scale and this in this sort of arena with the crowd going wild, and it was just great. And this was at a time when the Swans were pretty awful, and we kept going and going, and I just loved that experience. And then playing, you know, it was even better. It was free, it was physical, and I was never much good at soccer because I was always getting pulled out for contact. So all of those things that I've been really bad at suddenly were, you know, a valued part of the game. And I guess the most important thing about AFL was that, you know, anyone could play it. You didn't have to be particularly good at any one thing. All you had to do was go as hard as you could and look out for your teammates. And I think that's why women really gravitate to the game, because it's quite a powerful team game. But it also, it's quite free. You can have a go. It doesn't matter if you make a mistake. You know, it's just the next opportunity. So the game just keeps going. And I think it's got something really fundamentally awesome about it. I like kicking a footy. I've always liked kicking a footy. I think there's something pretty cool about that. But, you know, it's just got that diversity of skills. It's not, at that local level, it's not technical like other games can be. It's just kind of pure fun. Is that enough?
Yeah, that's a pretty wonderful way to describe it, I think. Pure fun. When you reflect on the last, I guess, 17 years, what role has football played in your life?
You know, like friends and, I don't even know if I can explain that. You know, adventures, friends, you know, cunning plans. Like we were always having mad plans for ways we could get more interest in women's football, and we did some pretty mad stuff. Like somehow we managed to talk people like Tony Lockett into doing, you know, and Ron Barassi into supporting what we did. We took Ron Barassi out to a nightclub once. I don't even know how or why we even thought we could pull these things off. We made a film in 2002. We wrote a song. We have a football song. So we had all the kind of cultural side of it. We had banners and just the friendships and the camaraderie of a team. And, you know, just that kind of thing of doing something before everyone else is doing it, like being at the front of the movement. And, I mean, I wish someone else had done it, but, you know, and I'd been able to play as a junior girl when I would have been really good. But that's not our, you know, that's not my generation's experience of it. But we had great fun, you know, I guess doing whatever it took to get footy happening.
So can you tell me how you felt when the AFLW competition was announced in 2016?
Yeah, look, I was excited about it, but I was also a bit like, wow, how on earth is that going to happen in a year, because it had been brought forward. I was also thinking, you know, when we were talking about it beforehand, we were thinking, how's that going to impact on the National League, because we didn't really know the framework and we didn't know it was going to be an out-of-season competition. So it was, you know, there was sort of, wow, I hope we can keep our local competition going without it helping, not detracting. And then, you know, just like, wow, okay, fine. That was our attitude 15 years ago. We just said, let's just do it. And, you know, thank God the AFL's decided to do it now. I think it would have been a great success if they'd done it 5 years earlier as well, by the way. I just think, you know, whatever happened last year, everything aligned and people said, yep, let's do it now. And so it was kind of more like, wow, I wonder what's going to happen. I didn't really have any expectations. I thought it'd be great because I knew that the football would be excellent. I didn't know how the administration of it would work out. I didn't know what Sydney teams they'd be. And then I ended up talking to the Giants and helping them with their submission because I really like their community inclusive thinking. And, you know, they're a good club. So even though I'd been a Swan supporter, I really liked what they were doing. And, you know, as it turned out, they were the team in Sydney.
So let's go back to that week leading up to the first game.
Yeah.
What are your memories of that week? Like, what were your original plans for the first game?
I hadn't worked out what to do. I was just going along with my regular week. I thought, oh, we've got to celebrate the Giants game, which was fine. I kind of thought we could do something nice for that. But, you know, and I think we ended up just having a barbecue. I think it was on the Sunday, so it must have been back. But anyway, I was like, I just had no plans. And I noticed on Facebook a few people going, oh, we're going down to the game. I was like, oh, yeah, well, that'd be cool. And then on the Friday, I had lunch with my cousin, and she'd flown up from Melbourne. And I was sitting in the middle of Sydney having lunch with her, and I suddenly realised I could just fly down there. And at that moment, I thought, I need to fly down there. So I went back to my desk and got online and desperately tried to find a flight that would get down there in time. And, you know, the internet was going pretty slowly and kept timing out. It was getting a bit stressful and very expensive. But by that point, I just didn't care. And so I logged on, got my ticket, and then just ran out of the office. It was about 3 o'clock. I just left. I didn't tell anybody. Oh, I told my colleagues, but I didn't tell my boss. And jumped on a train and went to the airport and ran the entire way, ran up to the front of the, you know, VIP desk and said, oh, you've got to get me onto this flight. And, you know, they're about to close it. And ran down to the boarding area. You know, I didn't have any clothes. I didn't have a toothbrush. I didn't have anything. And the plane was a bit late, which was annoying, and got on the plane, flew down, pushed my way off the plane, ran to the taxi rank, pushed my way up the front of that and jumped in a cab. And I've never been to Princess Park, so I had no idea. I was just hoping to God the taxi was taking me the quickest way. And it was pretty hectic traffic on a Friday arvo. And, yeah, just pulled up and there was a big traffic jam and I just went, I'm running from here, jumped out, just ran to this ground, crowds everywhere. I thought, I'm not going to get in. And meanwhile, I'd been ringing my friends going, you know, I reckon this is going to be really hard to get a seat in. Can you get in there and buy me a seat? And these are my best, oldest footy friends, the ones that I started the Wolves up with in 2000, and they now live in Melbourne, and one of them's a Collingwood supporter, so she was pretty excited. And I sort of ran around the ground, and in the end I just ran up to the front of the queue and walked in. I probably just walked straight past Gil McLaughlin. I wouldn't have cared. And I was like, I deserve to be at this game. It suddenly dawned on me that how unbelievably significant it was. And I walked straight up the first set of stairs, and it was just, you know, packed. And I stood, you know, in one of the kind of aisleways, and I had the most perfect view of the ground right on the halfway line, and looking straight across at the two teams standing up to sing the national anthem in this beautiful, you know, late afternoon glow. And it was just one of the most emotional moments I've ever experienced. It was beautiful to see the respect and the passion that we'd had for such a long time for us playing the game was now, you know, shared by so many other people. And yeah, just I stood there, and it all happened, and the centre-bounce happened, and there was the repeat stoppage, and it was like, wow, that was so great. Let's do it again. And it just the game went from there, and I just remember that first few moments of the match. It was such tight, tough, desperate football, the sort of football you get at the beginning of a grand final, and it was so intense, yet there was this moment of sort of inner peace just for me to be able to see what was happening out there, that we'd finally got to this point.
That's beautiful. I feel a bit teary actually after listening to that. So, what else do you remember of that night?
Yeah, I know. I had to think about it a bit as you were, after you asked me to talk about it. It made me think of the photos of the 1940s, I guess, when those football grounds just had people packed into it, like the aisleways were 4 or 5 deep, and you saw these pictures where people were sitting along the top of grandstands, but that was the only thing that was missing. There was people standing everywhere. They just weren't allowed to sit on the roof. And I thought, wow, isn't that fantastic? It's not, it's just pure passion. It's not, oh, here's your seat, and it was real community spirit. And I stood there for a while, and I started getting these messages from my friends who are, we've got a seat for you, but people are trying to take it. Come on, quick, get here. And I thought, okay. And I think I saw the first goal. I kind of wanted to see that moment, so I waited, and Garner kicked the goal for Collingwood, and I thought, oh well, my Collingwood friends will be happy. And I went down to walk around, and it was behind the stands was just packed, and I walked up, and you could hardly move, but there wasn't any anxiety or stress. Everyone was just really mellow and really positive and really helpful, and they just let you through. And the other beautiful thing was all these girls wandering around in their footy jumpers, like teenage girls in little groups, and they looked, really comfortable with who they were, and they were really proud to be supporting their team, and they just looked really empowered and having a good time. And that's not something I remember from my childhood. So, I thought, wow, that's cool. And I got around to my mates, and they were sitting with a whole lot of Carlton supporters. I was like, okay, this is going to be interesting. And there was a bunch of fans who were there to support a Carlton player called Audley, and they all had her face. So there was about 30 of them. They'd all come from her, the school she teaches at. They'd all come on a bus. Some of them had never been to a football game before, but they were all there to support her. And they, kept waving these faces around, which was really good fun. And we got to really enjoy that second half where, there was all these great Carlton goals at that end. And I think, poor old Laddie, who supports Collingwood, was getting a bit sort of she was really positive, but she was also, oh, come on, Collingwood. And Emma Grant had a big hit on her, and there were a few really big, tough moments. It was terrific. And then I'm trying to think, we were just really willing on Mo Hope because she'd been such a, such an advocate for the game and such a fantastic role model. And as one have said at halftime, she just didn't look right. I think there were some injury concerns, and we were just willing her on. And so she got, I think she had a shot at goal early in the third quarter, and we were just, holding our breath, hoping that she would kick that goal, and I think it was a point. So, it was just one of those moments that you just wished it had been a goal. But we had this fantastic view of Bree Davey and Vesio's like free goal of left foot snap. And all the while, the Audley fans are getting more and more, excited. And my mate, who's a bit of a stirrer, started out. They were all calling out Audley, Audley, and she started to call out ordinary, ordinary, which was so not true. But anyway, It was a lot of fun. There was a lot of, you know, kind of, I don't know, playfulness between the crowd, and certainly at no point was there any negative, you know, everyone was just really happy to see this game of footy, and it didn't actually matter who won, it just mattered that it was a great game.
When you think about that night now, is there a moment that really stands out for you?
Oh, look, I think that moment when I walked up the stairs, not knowing what to expect after this mad journey down there, and saw the team of women, two teams of women standing there and singing the national anthem, and this crowd just fixated on what was happening and giving them that moment of respect. That was really beautiful and incredibly powerful.
And what are your sort of lasting emotions? Like, what was your emotional response to that night?
Yeah, I still feel really emotional thinking about it. I'm so glad I went. It was crazy to have not thought of how significant that moment would have been earlier. But I'm so glad I went. I don't think I've ever been to a sporting match that felt like that or will ever feel like that again. I mean, I went to the Swans grand final in 2005 when they hadn't won for 7 years. This was better than that. This was extraordinary. This was completely, I keep saying it was a sort of a pure expression of football, and I really think it was. It was, there wasn't, you know, no one paid for a ticket. Really, the women weren't being paid, you know, in the same way that the men are. They still all got their jobs. Orderly's school was down there cheering her on, you know, and I just think, you know, that there's something about that that is you can't capture. It was a historic moment, but it was also an expression of love of footy and also of respect for women.
Pretty special.
Pretty special.
So when you reflect on that first game and the first season as well, what does it mean for you personally?
Sometimes I just feel really sad that I couldn't have played when I was that age. I know that sounds selfish, but I just would have loved it. Like, it would have changed my experience of being a young person, and, you know, and as a teenage girl. So I think when I see those teenage girls really empowered to do something they want to do is really, you know, emotional. And I just like watching it. Like, it's not, like, we always knew that it was a great sport. You know, a lot of people who played very elite levels of other sports, you know, Olympians, hockey players, soccer players, came to AFL, and there was just there's just something about the game that I think really brings out great sportsmanship and really builds on people's natural abilities. And so we always knew that women's AFL was awesome. You know, even back in the early days when the guys said, "Why do you want to do that? Or is this just kick and giggle?" And believe me, they said some pretty naughty stuff. Having said that, there was a lot of guys who were very positive and supportive and respected us as footy players, not as women who wanted to kick a footy. But, you know, I just really enjoy the game. I love watching the game. I love the kind of intrigue. I love the competitiveness. I love, you know, thinking about how to build your list, you know, the sort of players you need where to win, you know, the sort of psyching out or psyching in or whatever you want to call it. And I love the fact that there's now a huge national conversation where you see women athletes, but you also see the journalists taking a lead role, the women coaches taking a lead role, and, you know, increasingly, you know, it just demonstrates that women are pretty good at sport. And, you know, if you're a smart coach, you want to have them playing as much of a role as the men, and it, I mean, it's taken such a long time to change, but we've done it.
And what do you think it means more broadly, like for the wider community? What does it mean to have an AFLW competition?
That's an interesting question, because in a way, I've always found it incredible that people didn't take more seriously the inequality in sport. So, you know, for a long time there's always been conversations about, you know, equal pay or, breaking the glass ceiling and women in boardrooms, and there's still problems of numbers in those areas. But I just kept thinking, how can you have football grounds all over the country that only half of the population ever get to aspire to play on? And for years, no one seemed to sort of talk about it. And even going down to your local club, it's even today, and it's actually changed with the AFLW, but I would say even a year or two ago, I still felt a bit out of place, you know, rocking it. When you're with your women's footy team and you're doing your women's footy thing, all good, you know, nothing can stop you. But even amongst the juniors, you know, even when you rock up on a Saturday and you're the coach, and you just get this different reaction from the other kids' coaches. And can I just tell you, most of them don't know, especially in Sydney, anywhere near as much as what we know about football, and that used to get me really irritating. But the AFLW has actually changed that. There's been this cultural shift that suddenly women are not expected just to do canteen at sports clubs. They're actually seen as, footy minds, as you know, people with footy skills, and people are good at what they do when it comes to AFL and sport in general, and really smart. And you want them doing that. And I think, you know, I think there's been this real kind of it's kind of a problem in Australian society that it's been like that. And I think the AFLW and also, you know, what we've seen in netball and some of the other codes, but particularly the AFLW, because of the incredible media coverage and that it got, has really changed something fundamental about our society.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely, 100%.
Yeah, I wish I could say that a bit quicker. Will you edit some of this?
Yeah. If you want to rephrase that again or say that again, go for it.
Yeah, look, there's probably bits in there you can take.
Yeah.
But definitely, it was a... Having an equal footing in footy clubs was a really important step that Australia had to take, and I don't think it was ever going to be complete without the national competition, without the AFLW.
Perfect. So, sorry, just checking through my questions. Can I just clarify, do you coach at the moment? Is that right?
So I actually coach kids. So I don't coach the women's at the moment. I'm the president of the Wolves, but I'm not, I coach my sons. And actually when we started, it was funny, we had a meeting with the AFL in Sydney and said, oh, we want to have a league. And they looked at us in kind of bemusement, and I could see them thinking, what is the benefit of this? I could see their minds kind of ticking over, and I think, you know, we were sort of saying, look, you know, you want women playing, but you know also women who play will be able to contribute back to the game in the future. And you could see them sort of trying to work this out, and so that's what I've done. You know, I play footy, I love footy, but I kind of want my kids to love it too, and I also, that they're boys, and I also want them to understand that women are as influential on the footy field as men. And in fact, my son Malian And he's a bit older now, so he's wised up, but he thought I was the best AFL player in Australia after Adam Goods. And I was his footy hero. And he also thought that women started, played AFL first, and then men kind of, you know, came along. So
that's so
kind
great.
Of cool. Yeah.
I've just completely blanked on the question that I was going to ask you. What, when you think about the AFLW moving forward and even women's football more broadly, so local and community competitions, what's your sort of dream vision for what that looks like?
Yeah, that, so, I mean, I guess ultimately those elite players deserve the right to be professional athletes in the same way as the men are. And I think there will be a lot of pressure on them to do that in coming years. A lot of pressure on the athletes, but hopefully that will translate into pressure on the AFL. You know, I've heard people involved with the AFL say, you know, a fully fledged competition in 5 years is not out of the question, although we know that, you know, it's a very sort of progressive approach, and, you know, seeing the clubs come in a sort of in an orderly way, I suppose, is how they're dealing with it. It's interesting that it works in summer and it doesn't affect the local leagues by taking the very best out of those clubs, but it must be so hard to play AFL at that level in when it's that hot. So I think there's just a lot of challenges. You know, obviously the summer period gives greater exposure. It's a little bit like the decision that soccer made, where you're not competing with the men's league. So I'm pretty open-minded about what it looks like. But I do think that they should be paid, you know, consistently with the men in coming years and be able to focus on their sporting career and not do other jobs or not do it only part of the year. I think that's really hard for those athletes. But, you know, more importantly, I just want to see at a club level, you know, completely kind of inclusive and equal environment where the boys and the girls' pathways are the same. They're given the same opportunities and respect, and all those kids get to enjoy footy, and the really good ones get to take it up as a kind of as a career and as a passion. So for me, it's just getting more girls to play, and giving them that same support as the boys. And we're not there yet. Like, as great as it is, there's still lots of things that we can do to make it better.
Absolutely. You've probably seen the photos of that team in Perth in 1915, the Foy and Gibson factory workers and shop girls.
Yeah.
What do you imagine they would think about a national women's football competition?
Gosh, I just don't know. I hope they don't think, oh my gosh, that took a long time to happen. That would be quite depressing. But they will probably feel the same way as I do, which is, oh, that's really awesome. I'm so pleased it's happened. I wish I was a bit younger and could be part of it. Or in their case, I wish I was alive. That's not very helpful thought, is it? But I don't know. I mean, I've read Burnett's book. We actually did a launch for it in Sydney. And they were doing such interesting things. Like, they really didn't have any support at all in many respects. And they were often kind of sidelined as a kind of a novelty act. And that's how people sometimes wanted to talk about us in the early days. And I don't think they would have ever thought of themselves as a novelty act. I don't think you go out onto a football field and run around and kick the footy and push and tackle and fight for it without being serious. So I think they were probably pretty serious. And I think they would have just really enjoyed it like we do.
I'd hope so.
I imagine they think, why do we have to wear these ridiculous, you know, heavy, you know, dresses? I don't know how they played footy in dresses. And I love the fact that they sort of did sneaky things to their bloomers and to their frocks to kind of turn them into shorts and make it a bit easier for them to play. But, you know, they were amazing.
They certainly were. Is there anything else that you want to tell me about your journey through football or that first game or anything else that you want to tell me?
I don't think so. I'm just really pleased that you're recording these stories because it's really important that women tell their own histories and that those accounts are captured. So thank you.
Thank you, I should say, for being a part of it. Yeah, okay. I think we've got everything we need there then.
Anyway, if you want to ring back and say, oh, can you say this bit differently or whatever, so it sounds good in your doco, I'm really
that's okay.
I'm fine with doing that. Yeah, of course it is.
Okay, wonderful.
I want it to be awesome.
So do I. You know, I think I was sitting in front of you at that game. I was sitting in the
with
first
those fans.
Yeah, I was sitting in the first level in front of those Shea Audley faces. I remember turning around and seeing them and just thinking, how amazing is that?
I know, they were so into it, weren't they? Like, it was so annoying in a way because, you know, we're like, come on, Collingwood. But at the same time, they were just so, they were so passionate for her. I was so happy for her. I thought, imagine if your entire workforce came and cheered you at a footy game. How would you feel? Pretty good.
Yeah, pretty special feeling. And I do remember seeing some other T-shirts with some other names and bits and pieces on them as well. And, yeah, getting a bit emotional about it now.
Yeah. It's actually really hard to remember the actual game. Like, there's only a few things that really pop out because the environment was so overwhelming. Like, the atmosphere was so overwhelming that, you know, you kind of, it just blurs into one amazing experience.
That was a great soundbite. I'm glad we captured that one.
Cool.
Okay. All right, I think that's all we'll need for today. But, yeah, if I do need anything more, I can give you a buzz.
Yeah.
I will need you to pop a name and a signature and a date on that consent form and pop it back to me if that's okay.
Just sign it and email it?
Yeah, that's totally fine. Cool. If you just print your name and sign and date it down the bottom and email it back to me, that's perfect. There is a possibility that the audio and the documentary will be submitted to the State Library of Victoria's archives. So if that does happen, there will likely be another consent form because they will need
cool.
to get your okay for that. So it's just a wait and see on that. They're enthusiastic, but just still confirming that may happen. So if and when that does, I'll be in touch with another consent form and we'll go from there.
Cool, that sounds great. And are you going to kind of, just let me know what you do with it and like when it's launched and stuff. So
yeah, well, I'm aiming for before the launch of the next season. So I'm aiming for like mid-January that this will be out. But yeah, I'll most definitely be in touch and keep you up to date with what's happening and where we're at. Absolutely.
Mm. Yeah. The footy team, you know, my footy team, and this is, you know, it's you always get little advantages from talking to everyone around the country, but Brunette contacted me and I talked to her a little bit about the New South Wales history, but I also sent the photo of our first footy team winning our grand final, so there's a picture of us in that book was like, yes.
Oh, I'm gonna have to. Unique. I'm gonna have to look it up. I've got a copy of that book, so I'm gonna have to have a look at that.
Yeah. Have a squeeze. It's the Western Wolves, but I was so proud that we, you know, we're a little piece of history, and you know, so every time an opportunity like this comes up, I think, yeah, it's really important to know that, you know, although I know that Victoria is obsessed with AFL, there's pretty healthy pockets of obsession going on in other parts of the country too.
Absolutely.
And we've all played a role. And actually, the national network and those national championships in the early days and that national committee was really important in pushing that profile of women's AFL out of the states or the local leagues, and saying this is a bigger picture plan, and I'm really proud that New South Wales was always part of that, and you know, often at the forefront of it. So
and I think you should be really proud of your contribution as well, what you've done.
And it's really important to me to see, you know, people like Debbie Lee, who was around at the time when I played, playing a leadership role, like a footy leadership role, you know, coaching the Victorian team recently. Because I think sometimes when you shift from being, you know, run by the women who play, or you know, from the community to the professional, sometimes those people get left behind because they've got a different way of working. We've all learned how to work at a community level, and we don't necessarily have the same approach as the professional side of things, but it doesn't mean it doesn't work. And I'm really glad that people like that are getting a go in the national, you know, scene these days.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really important, I think, to have women at every level.
Yeah, and look, there was a little bit, I sort of felt, you know, it would be quite easy to pretend that there wasn't 100 years of women playing football. Like, it's a little bit of an inconvenient truth, because it kind of raises the question of why did it not happen earlier. And there was a little bit of kind of a narrative around, you know this is the first, this is, you know, we're doing this great new thing. And it was like, actually, you're building on the work of generations of women and men who've really believed in women playing football, and that's even more powerful than the narrative about, you know, hey, look at us, we've come up with this great idea. And that's why I pulled out all those documents. So we did a bit of a launch in Sydney and said, no, you know, there's pioneers here who've been doing this for many years, and we want to be at the centre of this fantastic development.
I couldn't agree more. I think it's really important, and I guess that's why Brunette's book is so, and Rob's book is so important, yeah, is acknowledging that history and that is there, because I wasn't aware of that until I read that book, which is almost quite upsetting, coming from Victoria, which, as you said, is a football mad state. To not be aware of that history as a woman was quite upsetting in a way. So I think it's really important that we cement what's happening now, so that never happens again.
Yeah, that's true. And that takes a whole lot of different people to buy into. You know, we never wanted to go backwards. Only wanted to get bigger. And that comes from the pressure, the community, the grassroots pressure. This is just an aside, but I took my son to a thing called Yarn Up. It's a speaking, young people's public speaking event at Parliament House, and they all had to come up with speeches. And he's in Year 5, and so there were 70 little kids doing speeches. I thought it was going to be the longest day of my life, but they were actually all really quick and good. And the girl who won got up and made the most awesome speech about women athletes being paid the same as men. And she talked about women AFL players. And she did a comparison between what, you know, a rookie who doesn't play one game gets $57,000 a year. And, you know, that's so much more than the women who play every game in the season. And it was brilliant. It was, and she said things like a famous footballer, Paul Gallen in Sydney, you know, you'd never see him in a coffee shop serving coffees. He's, you know, he's a professional athlete. And I thought, wow, if 10-year-old girls are making those speeches, then this is never got in trouble. This is only going to get better. And she's not the only, you know, young girl, and she doesn't play footy, but the only young girl who's been captivated by the AFLW and what it means for women. And, you know, they're seeing it as, you know, this sort of new wave of empowerment, and they're not going to let it go.
Is that something that, it's something that I had thought about throughout the season, was those young girls. And I'm a Bulldogs supporter, so I went to every Bulldogs game. And I've seen so many young girls and young women just sort of hanging over the boundary fence and, you know, sitting in the stands. And something that struck me about that was they were seeing women use their bodies in a way that so often we don't get to see.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, they could feel proud of their physicality. How great is that? You know, they're powerful young people, and they should be inspired to go off and, you know, play, not just watch. And it's awesome. I wish, as I said, I wish that had been my childhood.
Oh, look, mine too, honestly. Yeah, and I guess seeing those kind of different ideas of what a woman can look like, you know, someone like Taylor Harris, or someone like Melissa Hickey, or someone like Sarah Perkins, and the way they can have an impact on the footy field regardless of what they look like.
I know. How great is Sarah Perkins? Like, how great is she? She's just... You know, I just can't imagine how many young girls just see her and go, you know, I'm a big girl and I'm going to go and use it, you know.
Yeah.
I sat next to the goal shooter for the Giants from the netball team the other day at the footy, and I was just in awe of her. She must have been nearly 6'4" or 6'5", but she was just... so, like, solid and powerful. I just sat there going, oh my God, you know. And I think that's fantastic that people are now having that reaction to women. You know, these women are big and strong and or fit and fast and relentless and focused. And it's just really, you know, it's fantastic to see. And maybe that's one of the most exciting things to see come out of all of this, that that powerful woman image is so embraced. So anyway, cool.
Yeah, I think it's a really important sort of, perhaps something that wasn't necessarily front of mind when we first found out about the competition and, you know, got all excited about that, was that sort of flow-on effect for everybody. I mean, I'm older than most of the women in the AFLW, but I still feel some sort of I guess empowered is one word. Watching them out there feels, I'm not even sure I can really put it into words.
It's hard, isn't it? It kind of legitimizes your inner strength, like your physical strength. You know, because I've always felt pretty strong. Like, if someone came up to me and gave me a hard time, I'd push them over. Like, I've never felt physically intimidated. And that's something I've always been really, is really important to me. And to sort of have that, like, now a legitimate, awesome thing about being a woman is quite, it just makes you feel strong and positive about who you are.
And inspired. I think
inspired.
I feel very inspired.
I mean, some of those women, they're just, you know, Chelsea Randall, she's the toughest person I've ever seen. Her grand final, like, how does she fly through the air, land on the ground, leap up, and do something equally amazing a second later? Like, she's just amazing. And that was one of the things I loved about footy was, you know, you'd mark up against a really powerful opponent and just, you know, matching your strength against them and, you know, and working out how to, get in front of them or kind of physically, you know, dominate them with whatever asset, you know, you had, if you were taller than or faster than whatever. It was just such a great part of footy. I remember once marking the full forward from Victoria in the Nationals, and this was in a game where they kicked, you know, 164. They scored 164 and we kicked 2 points. So you can imagine what it felt like marking the full forward. She didn't kick a goal on me, which I was pretty proud about. And at one point I thought, I'm just going to, like, you know, muscle up to her a bit, you know. So I was pushing into her. I was just sort of, you know, into her side, and she just pushed back and she seriously just slid me across the front of the goals, you know. And I was trying to stop her and she just pushed me sideways, and I was not going to be able to resist it, and it was so much fun.
Thank you so much for speaking with me. I really appreciate it. And enjoy the rest of your weekend.
You too.
Thank you.
Okay, see ya.
Bye.